You're listening to Mike on the Mic on 91.5 WMFO Medford and BumblebeeRadio.com.
Those are the days being lost in a phase, not unfair to assume that I was a mime in a place and a time somewhat ancient. Titus, shit, Midas, strident wetness. And we have less than all, every keepsake, every law, with a school.
In the morning at WMFO Radio and simulcasting on Bumblebee Radio. I'm Mike. Let me tell you what I played in that last set, and then we have a bunch of people in the studio that you will hear when I turn the mics up. That last record was Guided by Voices, new noise from them. Their latest is called Crawl Space of the Pantheon. I wonder what condition they were in when they thought of that name. I don't know. But it wasn't, great title. It's called We Outcast Them All, or Outlast Them All. And I played that right after Psychedelic Furs, which is just before that. All That Money Wants from 1988's All This and Nothing. The lead vocals are so similar. It was kind of a cool segue there. Isn't that true, Steve?
Yes, that was very cool.
I love it when you agree with me. Oh, is it echoing in your
echo,
ears?
Echo, echo. Hello.
Yeah, I don't know. Tom Baker, a wonderful album from him in 2024, from called Justine and Me, that was Walking to the Ocean. And Tad, I think you know a little bit about that song. You sing on that song at all, a lot.
Yep.
When he's live. Yep. Were you on the record too on that recording?
I played an acoustic track.
Tad Overbaugh.
I did some backing vocals. It wasn't on that one though. It was, I'm forgetting now. It's right. Terrible. My younger brain would remember, but
please, please, we can talk.
I
later.
Sang on two, and I played acoustic on one.
okay, I knew you were on the record. Cheap Trick, just before that, from their record All Washed Up, that was 12 Gates, and The Sins were the great Tom Petty cover from their latest record called Confess, that was You Wreck Me. And at 10:05 in the morning, we're just about ready to start a brand new edition of Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico, and here we go.
Test, test, quiz, quiz. Welcome to a special live episode of Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. We're here live at WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. Our first live show of 2026. Mark McKay of The Long Wait is here today, which I'm very excited about. But first, we have a special live performance from a recent guest of the show, and that's how we're going to kick things off this morning. Tad Overbaugh, who was on the show a little while back, is live in the studio, accompanied by fellow musician Chuck Vath, and they're going to play a couple songs for us this morning. We got the great Mike Newman on the board. Hi, Mike. Are you all right today?
I'm good. How you doing, Steve?
Good. I'm echoey, but I'm good. so we're going to get the show going. So please welcome to the show, Tad Overbaugh.
All right. Thank you. This is called July. 1, 2, 3, 4. Saturday fab of the summertime, when fireworks fly high. Oh, I know that you've arrived. Can't you stay tonight? Can't you stay forever? Don't leave me again, don't leave me July. Don't leave me July, 'cause 31 days ain't enough of your time. Well, August can't try with a Sunday style, and January's eyes, yeah, was never my type. Can't you stay tonight? Can't you stay forever? Don't leave me again, don't leave me July. Don't leave me again, don't leave me July, 'cause 31 days ain't enough of your time. Can't you stay tonight? Can't you stay forever? Don't leave me again. Don't leave me again. 31 days ain't enough. Don't leave me again. Don't leave me, July. Don't leave me again. Don't leave me, July. 'Cause 31 days ain't enough of your time. Don't leave me again, July. Don't leave me again, July.
All right. Thanks for having us, guys. The iced coffee worked. We're awake. All right, we're going to do one more here. It's good we're saying this here at the radio station. This is going to hopefully be the next single off the record. It's called Hurricane Season. All right. Are you ready?
You're just like hurricane season. I never know what's come my way. Nail down everything inside. You make everything wrong that was right. You're just like hurricane season. You turn blue sky to the darkest gray. Your wind just wrecks my life. You make everything wrong that was right. Have mercy on me this time, 'cause your thunder's cracking me inside. Cause your thunder's cracking me inside. You're just like hurricane season. You're just like hurricane season. You're just like hurricane season.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Tad Overbaugh. That was awesome, man. Stick around, guys. We're going to play a song by The Long Wait, since their fantastic drummer, Mark McKay, is here. And then we're going to come back and talk to everybody. This song's called Let It All Burn.
Out the mouth, it won't be long till this whole fucking thing goes down.
It doesn't matter to me if one song goes from like, you know, total like alt country to like, let's get real heavy. That was a long way. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Steve.
I'm so happy.
And hey, Mike.
So happy that Mark McKay's here, one of my favorite people, one of the nicest people around.
You're far too kind. Thank you.
You know, you've been on the show a few times, but I was trying to remember. We actually met in a Newbery Comics store, right?
Absolutely.
First time?
Yeah.
What store was it? Newbery Street?
Newbery Street, yeah.
And that must have been the early 90s.
Late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. I started there in like 87, I think. We started working there, so.
And, you know, you played in Slapshot for a long time, as everyone knows. And we were looking through the Slapshot records a few minutes ago.
So funny to see those pictures. I mean,
you know, before I get into it, and we're going to, those other guys will be coming back in the room, Tad and Chuck. I just want to share something with you. I was listening to Smartless. I don't know if you ever heard the Smartless podcast.
I love that.
Yeah, it's with Will Arnett, Jason Bateman, and Sean Hayes. And I listen to it all the time because it's really funny. They have good guests. And they had Charlie XCX on this morning, and I listened to it because I have an hour drive here. And she said some of the greatest. I really love her. I don't know. If you played one of her songs for me, I wouldn't even know.
Same
it.
Here.
And I know Brat was all the rage, you know, when Kamala Harris was running. They used it as her song.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. But I don't really know. But I got to tell you, after listening to this young woman talk, I'm in love with her. They asked her, so what's the music business like? And what did you think of the people when you got involved in the music business? And she goes, well, my first impression was that no one knows anything. And I thought that was like perfect.
Well, I mean, everything has just been completely put through the ringer, you know, for the music business. You know, the old models just don't work anymore. So people are taking charge of their careers, taking charge of their lives, their music, their art. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I'm bringing this up, because I'm going to talk to you about the changes, because I know you just played in New York and you played in Portland tonight, and you guys are doing a lot of touring. One other thing about the Charlie XCX show that I learned was that when you get these three older guys interviewing a young girl, it's just like, they didn't even know it. I love that show, but they were completely out of their element with her because she was like so smart that I don't think they knew how to deal with her. And it made me realize you got to let your guests finish talking before you cut them off. That's the other thing I got out of listening to that.
I hope you're on your best behavior today, Steve.
I'm going to try. So, Mark, you know, this is kind of a bittersweet thing that I'm bringing up with you right now. One of the reasons I wanted to have you here today was because we put this great show together for our 7th anniversary, Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico event at Sonya May 10th. But unfortunately, we have to reschedule the show until the fall, which I think is going to be a good thing because I was a little worried, and some other people were worried about the fact that it was Mother's Day. And my mother wasn't worried about it, but I'm sure other people had concerns about that. And I think that's what, you know, total transparency here. There was a lack of ticket sales, and they were getting worried, which doesn't really bother me because May 10th is a long time away, and I think a lot of people would have walked up, and I wasn't worried about the attendance at all.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's a fantastic lineup. I mean, celebrating you is something that everybody should and hopefully will come out when the show gets rescheduled.
That wasn't really my idea, by the way. Sean McNally came up with that. He's like, let's call it the 7th anniversary of Blowing. And I'm like, all right, I just want to have a show. I didn't want to make a big to-do about it. But unfortunately, if you're out there and you're one of the people that did buy tickets, you can get refunded. And we're going to reschedule this for the fall, which is actually a better time to do a show in Boston anyways than May, right?
It's, you know, I wish I knew about the kind of the infrastructure around Boston and how it works because it's just crazy. Clubs closing, clubs opening, clubs getting gobbled up by huge clubs, that kind of thing. So I'm interested to see what happens over the summer.
You know, and that's like another thing that we're talking about, because I know you took a break, a long break between Slapshot and the long wait, and the band ended up coming together because you guys did Slapknot, right? That's how the whole thing came together.
Hence the name of the band, The Long Wait, right? I mean, 20 years off the circuit was a long time.
And if you're out there listening and you're not familiar with The Long Wait, you need to get their debut album, which came out last year, and the band is like an all-star band. Let's see if I can remember everyone that's in the band. We've got Glenn Dudley singing from the Wrecking Crew.
Oh, yeah.
We got Daryl Shepherd on lead guitar, who played in Roadstar, and he's now in Kind. We have Stephen Ristine from Slapshot, original guitarist of Slapshot, along with our guest today, Mark McKay. And last but not least, very legendary guy, Jamie Sharapa from SSD Control. I will say SSD Control. I won't say SSD.
But, you're old school, Steve.
Yeah. So. But you guys are playing a show tonight in Portland, Maine.
Yeah.
And you still agreed to come on the radio at 10 o'clock in the morning. Thank you.
Oh, God, absolutely. I mean, any chance to kind of talk to you is always welcome. So,
what's your lineup tonight for anyone that's listening that might want to trek up to? I think it's only like about a 2-hour drive from Boston, right?
Yeah, I haven't been up to Portland in a while, but Tree is heading up the whole thing. And I think a couple of local support. I honestly don't know the bands, Ergy and Scythe, who, you know, what I've checked out so far are heavy as heck. So.
I think it's good for you guys because I think Tree draws really well in Portland. I know they do, in fact.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I mean, we just love those guys, and I love that they're back and so ferocious. Yeah, just looking forward to it so much.
I imagine you've probably known Dave Tree for a long time.
Honestly, I knew of him for a long time, but I only met him properly once we got this band back together and started
really?
Playing shows. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's legendary, of course, so, you know, everybody knows Dave Tree, but I hadn't really kind of met him properly. So.
They never really broke out of the New England circuit, but, you know, like Slapshot went to Europe and all this stuff, but they're still extremely popular in the New England area.
Yeah, and ferocious. I mean, they're just fantastic.
So you guys just played in New York
recently. Yeah.
And I want to talk about that and have a question, but I'm going to ask you, what's it like playing these shows now compared to when you were playing the shows in the 80s and the 90s? Because you took, like, what, about a 20-year
break?
Yes,
20 years.
So what's it like for you, I mean, getting in the van and doing the shows?
It's so different. You know, back then it really felt, like, purposeful to do it, like, for the scene, right? You know, the hardcore scene needs to live, so the bands need to get in the van and go and do it. Now, I mean, we're definitely compelled to play. You know, we wouldn't be playing if we weren't. But it feels a little less desperate now. We take our time. You know, we're trying to all get better on our instruments. We're trying to write songs that are interesting to hear and interesting to play. So it feels like a bit more of, I mean, it's going to sound ridiculous, but it feels more like an artistic pursuit rather than a kind of a scene-based pursuit.
What about the day-to-day, like, getting to New York and stuff? Is that...
I actually rented a minivan because we were going to take, you know, a couple of cars, and it was just, you know, it was looking crazy, getting people there and back. So I just rented a minivan, and we all just piled in and went down, so...
I got to ask you this question. You go to New York, and it's listed as former members of Slapshot and SSD Control and Wrecking Crew, but you guys are not a hardcore band.
No.
So what was it like? Were they expecting to see a hardcore band? Like, you played there twice, right?
Yeah, we've been there before, so I think that, you know, Drew Stone, who does the New York Hardcore Chronicles, he does an amazing job of spotlighting the bands and making sure that...
He promoted the shows?
Yeah. So they're free shows. They're all-ages shows. He's doing just amazing things down there, and he does his program a couple times a week. So I don't think people were expecting us to be a hardcore band. There was a good mix of genres on the bill. We play with the absolute legendary Wydye from Philadelphia, who are, you know, a hardcore band, but they just have really absolutely risen to the task of making it current and being really ferocious.
Was there, like, you know, slam dancing? And
oh, yeah. But it was like young kids who were just having a great time. It was like they got out of school and they came to the show, you know, like with their school bags and stuff. But everybody had a good time, totally just... You know, a nice, safe, fun time for everybody. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to imply that you guys aren't heavy, because you're very heavy.
Well, that's part of what we, you know, what we had to do with this band was, you know, slow it down so that we could beef it up. You know, Slapshot, I think, was kind of like at 90 miles an hour the whole time, all the time. This band is like, it's maybe 65, you know.
We might have talked about some of this stuff because four of you, the members of the band minus Glenn, were on. Glenn was on himself. You were on yourself. Daryl was on himself. You guys have all, I'm a big fan of everyone in this band.
Thank you.
You obviously know that.
Thank you.
You know, otherwise I wouldn't have asked you to play the show on May 10th, which is canceled. Sorry.
But postponed, Steve.
You know what I don't remember? Postponed, sorry. What I don't remember asking you about is the songwriting process. Mm. Did we talk? Well, I don't think we talked about that. What is the songwriting process for Slapshot? Do you guys...
Long wait.
Yeah. What did I say? Slapshot?
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
For the long wait. Like, I imagine Glenn writes the lyrics,
yeah.
But when you guys work out the music and the arrangements, do you do all this in the practice space, and how do you split the publishing up on the songs? I'm just curious.
I have no idea about the publishing, like literally no idea.
So you're not part of the songwriting?
I'm, you know, the drummer, so I'm probably like the least involved in the songwriting process, but it's all about, you know, who brings in the riff. We put it together. I make a mistake on the drums and it sounds cool and I just do it four times and just that kind of stuff. But it's really, the five of us get together. We record, you know, the very basics of it. Glenn will come back with lyrics next time we get together. He's a prolific lyricist, and I love what he writes. So, but it is just, we all five of us just bang it out.
Did you have the songs in place, and then Glenn came in and wrote the lyrics once the songs were already in place?
Initially, we had a couple of songs under our belt, because we had somebody we had were previously trying to work in as a vocalist. But
we know who it is. Everyone does.
Of course.
Keith Bennett.
Of course, Keith Bennett, right.
Keith
exactly.
Bennett was almost the singer of the
Long Wait. Yeah. Well, he was spread super thin, and he's still making amazing music and is an amazing guy. But Glenn was ready to commit. And once he came in, we knew that that was the lineup.
Yeah, and I love it.
Yeah,
I remember I was at the first show, which was at Notch Brewery, and you guys were like incredible. I saw two Long Wait shows and really good band.
Well, thank you.
If people out there listening haven't heard or seen the band, I highly recommend. You must have a date coming up around here soon, right? Well, sorry, besides May 10th.
Well, that was what I was looking forward to, so everything else just doesn't even matter. But
Well, you got Portland and you got
other
stuff.
Yeah, we got a couple of things booked. But,
Chuck and Tad just came back in the room, and you guys were great, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure, man. I'm glad.
It feels like an affront to hear, like, you know, the long wait after hearing that beautiful warmth. So thank you guys for that. That was really, really great.
I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful transition. I mean, it's kind of what my playlist looks like.
Yeah.
And I think most people know that I don't really give a... Oh, we're on live radio, so I can't say what I was going to say. I think most people don't really care about my transitions because if I like something, I don't care if it doesn't sound the same. Yeah. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I like variety. It kind of resets. You know, even if you make a playlist, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you go too much of the same thing, you start zoning out and not listening. Mm-hmm. So
I'm glad you guys are back here, because I have a very interesting topic that I want to bring up with all three of you. I want to know what you guys think about older bands that are still out there playing. Not necessarily that they're out there playing and doing it, like The Who just played Fenway Park. I was at that show, and a lot of older bands are doing it. I want to know about, I just heard about, do you know who Jeff Tate is? Singer of Queensryche.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Queensryche was this big metal band. They had platinum records and everything. And Jeff Tate has taken the selling the VIP packages to another level. Like, I'm familiar with Brett, you know, I worked with Poison years ago, so I've watched Brett Michaels and how he does it, and he has all these VIP and extra passes. What do you guys think about these bands that are still out there playing? Not just that they're out there playing, but they're also saying, for an extra $150, you can come and hang out with the band afterwards, and we'll give you a t-shirt, and you can spend time with us. What's your opinion on that?
Do you mean artists that were once kind of huge and still going out there? Or do you mean like local artists
huge bands that are still touring.
Okay.
But they're offering these VIP packages. You can get a regular ticket and you go to a show. But if you pay an extra $150 or whatever, you could come meet the band and hang out with them. What's your opinion on that? Do you think it's good that bands are doing that or not?
Well, I think if they still sound great and everybody in the band gets along and they're having fun still, it's great to go see that again. It's different when there's you kind of catch these shows and they're on their last legs and you can see it and you paid, you know, $150 ticket. For example, I ended up at Bryan Adams a couple years ago. Joan Jett was opening.
Wow.
And we went to see her was the first attraction, but it was stunning. Like, both were great, but Bryan Adams is like it's 40 years hasn't even passed. It's crazy. It's like, how are you still singing like that? And he had that like sort of razor blade gravel voice he could do. But I don't know. For me, it's kind of hard. I think it's nice if you have the money, I guess, why not spend the extra to meet a band that was like you're
but
here.
It's not very rock and roll. I mean, I just want to cut in here for a second.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't begrudge anybody trying to you know, make money, especially in the music business where, you know, musicians are the last to get paid, but it's a little gross. It's a little, shameless, I guess I would say, and not very rock and roll.
What do you think, Mark, before I say something about Jeff Tate, because I brought him up for a reason?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, kind of growing up in the punk scene, we, you know, it was all about tearing down the rock and roll industry, right? And you could go and hang out with a band and meet a band, and you know they're going to pile into your city in a van and that kind of thing. But you know, I mean, I have a healthy respect for anybody who is doing it for the right reasons. Like, I'm not going to pay $2,000 to meet Gene Simmons from Kiss, right? That's just not going to happen. But a package, you know, to meet an artist who is like deeply appreciative and really still doing, you know, contemporary stuff, I'm all for it. No problem.
Jeff Tate and his wife apparently bought this big house. I don't know what country it is. And now they're offering fans to come and stay with them for a price. It's like a bed and breakfast with the singer of Queensryche. And when I heard about that, I was like, okay, that's going to another level.
I mean, what could go wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, I would never let strangers.
Did they pad all
I mean,
the
it
walls?
Really depends what's included, though, right, Steve?
Yeah, you know. I don't know what they're thinking.
Is there breakfast, maybe, right?
The only thing I can think of that justifies that for me is, you know, so often the money's taken from the musicians, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's a middle person taking their fees for tickets, whatever. And I don't know, maybe that guy blew through all his dough and he's got to come up with something. That enables him to directly take a bunch of money in, do his thing, minimize like the extra hassles. That in that angle, I'm okay with it, but it is kind of weird. That's like going to the house concerts. Like, I saw Pat D'Anizio at a couple
Smithereens
solo concert shows at people's houses, and it was really cool. It was neat when people were doing that. This is like flipping the script, right? Mm. It's the opposite. The fans come to the guy or gal, and then I don't know. It's, I guess it's just that component of getting rid of the headaches makes it okay for me, and maybe making, you know, if you again, everything in music, it's crazy. All of the money's taken from the music. I don't know who got the idea that most of us have a bunch of money, but we don't. So
most musicians don't. Even famous musicians are broke, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a rough industry.
It's a bit of a sacrifice to devote that much time. You know, you can't be some high top-level CEO where you're busy 24/7. You need time to be creative and practice and, you know, go out and see other people and support
the community.
I mean,
Ted, I think you would agree. It's clearly a mental disorder of some kind to keep wanting to play music.
It's a sickness. And as Brian Hinneman said of the Bottle Rockets once, he's like, yeah, you got to be a little bit dumb to keep going in music as a musician. But there are some benefits to it, you know.
Yeah, this is two separate topics, you know. One is like the bands that keep playing till they're in the 80s, and the other is these VIP packages, which I'm not totally sure about. But, you know, I did go see The Who that I mentioned, and I got to tell you, I was really not looking forward to it. Mm. And I was more looking forward to the new Joe Perry project because I liked the lineup that Joe put together.
Yeah.
But The Who blew me away, man. Those guys surrounded themselves with all these young... Simon Townsend was up there, Pete's brother. Yeah. And then he had these younger people, and they rocked Fenway Park hard.
Yeah.
And Roger's voice really held up. And Townsend... He did a long spiel about how Boston was one of his favorite cities to play in.
Yeah.
People love that, you know. So I don't know. I was just curious about that because I heard about Jeff Tate, by the way, is not in Queensryche anymore. They tour. It's like one of those stories like Black Flag and Flag where you have two bands playing the same songs, both touring at the same time.
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Black Flag has a tour coming up with new members that are much, much younger.
A female singer, too.
Is Greg the last guy in the band?
He is. Yeah.
He's the only Black Flag guy.
He's sort of the guy behind the whole thing, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So at this point, it's almost a tribute band in some ways versus like the original artist.
But Keith Morris and Bill and Chuck Dukowski and who am I forgetting? They all go on tour as Flag, and they play all Black Flag songs, and they're great. The guitar player from The Descendants plays with them.
Edgerton Steve.
Yeah,
Steve
he Edgerton, does right, yeah. the Greg Ginn. Yeah. 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 He's really good.
That's another thing where I don't know why I'm thinking about it in terms of probably because I have two kids in college this year and I'm absolutely broke, but these guys, I'm just thinking about it like, okay, these guys devoted a bunch of their life, sacrificed like maybe going to extra school or getting a career. They did music. They lived it and did it and they have a chance to still do something they love, and if they can get paid for doing like a close thing to Black Flag, I guess that's okay if you come at it from that angle. Like you're just like, how do you reinvent yourself so late in life, you know? But it also is a little lame at the same time.
I don't think Black
Flag, it's watered
Flag.
Down.
Yeah,
you know?
And I don't think Black Flag's offering a VIP package to any of their shows. Come and hang out with the friendly Greg Ginn. If you've ever met Greg Ginn, I have.
You know what's interesting? 2 years ago, I saw Soul Asylum, who I hadn't seen in a long time. They only have Dave Berner still. And I was just expecting not to like it. Maybe like the Who show. I just kind of went for the hang. And they sounded better than ever. They have this great younger guy playing guitar, bass player. Those two guys sing harmonies, and it just sounds like gold against Dave. And they had it's not Michael Bland.
There's nothing wrong with
different
that, guy, though.
It's just one guy. But honestly, it was as good as ever. And you know, I don't know. Maybe if I saw the band a bunch when I was in the '80s when they were getting going, and I really had an attachment. Sometimes you get attached to the four guys or five people in a band, whatever,
I'm like
and
that.
You do not want any changes. If there's a change, it ruined the vibe, can't happen again, you know? Not going.
You know, I saw those guys last year, too, and I thought they were awesome. And they were, I feel like they were doing it for the right reasons. Like, they're still doing a rock show that has not changed a lot in the last 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
That was cool. I respect that.
They also had just put a new record out, too, so it's not like they're sitting around like just coasting on the past.
I have a real love for Minnesota bands.
Same.
Matter of fact, when Tad and Chuck were playing July, I closed my eyes and I was like, is that Paul Westerberg I'm listening to? Did you get that vibe too, Mark?
I was just basking in it. It was really beautiful. So
yeah, I mean,
thanks.
You've been compared to the Replacements before.
The whole Minnesota thing, there's so many. I liked a lot of the twin tone bands and of course the Replacements, Soul Asylum,
Husker Du,
like the and then somehow probably the crappy winters, those guys just hunkered down and just kept pounding out songs until they had good ones, you know. And
so many great bands from Minnesota. I mean, just going all the way back to Dylan and of course Prince and Jayhawks and just list goes on and on.
I just like their sound, their energy of their music and the way they sang and all that. And a lot of those guys had some pretty clever lyrics. Like even Bob Mould had some cool turns of phrase, like country artists do, that were kind of neat. And if you really,
his solo records are all really good too. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I love Husker Du. To me, is one of the great. Bands.
Don't forget about Grant Hart. He wrote half those songs.
Yeah, he did.
And some of the best lyrics.
He wrote
lyrics.
Some of my favorite ones. Sorry, Somehow. And there's some. Diane is like total. Yeah. Did you ever do any shows with Husker Du?
No, but I saw them a bunch. I would. I think I ended up seeing them like 8 times, but we never played with them. Just got to enjoy the show.
It could have happened.
Oh, I wish it had, but I was very fortunate. So
yeah,
and that's really interesting. You bring up Dylan when you're talking about Minnesota. That was something that I hadn't quite gotten to that level yet. So
I mean, started it all.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Nice right, one, thanks.
We're going to take a break here and play a song.
That's right, music.
Yeah, I was gonna play this because they were going to be on the show, and they made one of the best records last year, like Tad and like Mark. I mean, there's some good records that came out in 20. Well, I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but first we're going to listen to an unbelievable song called Egypt, Massachusetts. There is a place, and this is Black Helicopter.
Oh.
That sounds so good in the headset, man. Yeah. Man, Black Helicopter. Wow, those guys, they record all their stuff themselves, and it blows my mind when a band does that. Have you guys ever done your own? Have you done it, Mark?
Negative.
What about you guys? Have you ever recorded in your home studio?
I've done, on this record, I did all my guitars at home, my rhythm and electrics. Hmm. Or, sorry, acoustic and electric rhythms. That's what I'm trying to say. And brought those tracks in. I've never had enough gear or the skills to do
to Minahan. Minahan,
yeah, I brought him into Wooly. Yeah, and there's the record Beauty and Barbed Wire record. I did all my vocals at home on that one, and I was like,
was that during the
2015-ish? 2014?
Oh, that was
a while ago. That first solo record, I spent, and I learned how to be like this editing guru, crazy man. You know, trying to do my my seven takes and put them together. It gets really it turns into a sickness. It's better to just go do your vocals with someone else and say, I'm going away. Just take those best four or five tracks I sang and make it, you know, pick the best. I will get neurotic over each word. And yeah, it wasn't a healthy period for me. I was,
yeah, well, I'm really,
guitars are different.
I'm very old school, and I would rather have a 24 track, you know, 2-inch tape machine there and let everyone go and record live and then keep the bass and the drum. I mean, this is geeky, but you know,
That's the ideal, Steve. Yeah. You know, I mean, and really what every band would want, I think, is that everything they play is recorded by somebody. You know, I think the ultimate is to go away somewhere, be in a house together or something, and spend weeks, you know, just take after take after take. That's when really, you know, magic can happen.
I agree.
It's tough these days. It's so expensive to go in the studio, and everyone's conscious of the time that you're spending, and, you know, very often you'll settle for takes that you probably wouldn't if you had 3 weeks to do it. Mm.
So, I've been lucky in my life because I was able to go to a lot of really good recording studios when I was younger working for labels, and I was in Criteria down in Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Derek and the Dominoes recorded, you know, Layla and Assorted Love Songs there, and the Allman Brothers and Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And the studio was mind-blowing. Mm. They had a pool table and a game room and a kitchen, but the board and everything was just incredible. Mm. Ironically, I was there with a band called Crier, and their record never came up. It was a deal with Third Stone Atlantic, and Atlantic passed on it, and the record never came out. I was going to say, Mark, do you guys have plans? Does the Long Way have plans to do more recording, or are you guys just going to play off of this record for a while?
Well, we're already writing new stuff, but the process is pretty slow for us, so... we absolutely will record again. Yeah, I mean, you know, we were still pretty new when we did that recording, so you know, we hear all the warts in it and all the mistakes and stuff.
You did it in two sessions at New Alliance, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it came out great.
Oh, thank you. I mean, we're definitely proud of it, but we're 3+ years into the band now, so I just think the next one will be better, and yeah.
You guys are phenomenal, and I'm sure that you realized when Daryl Shepherd started playing what an incredible guitar player he is.
Yeah, he definitely pushed us to the next level. I mean, he's the consummate musician. He's so talented.
We were talking about his guitar tone. You know, I'm not a technical guy, but I remember I was there at New Alliance when you got, and I was... Ethan was there, and Daryl was sitting there recording his live, and me and Ethan are just looking at each other like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Where is he coming up with this sound?
Yeah.
He's got like such a great guitar sound.
Yeah. So we've been really fortunate, I mean, to have Daryl in this, but we also had Jordan Wood in Slapshot, and he was the same way. Like, they would just sit him in the control booth, and they wouldn't even stop the tape. He would just do his lead after lead after lead in a row, and I'm just really fortunate to be surrounded with some really great musicians and some great guys.
Did you ever do that with Minahan when you worked with him? Did he play any leads on any of your stuff? Because he's done that with a lot of bands.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Chuck and I were just talking about that. So he did. So way back in the Kickbacks, there's a song called Going the Mile, and the guy in the band at the time, he's like, I just don't get what I should do on this one or whatever. So we were actually working at a different studio. This is after the EP we did with Dave. And we're like, Dave, could you just play on this? So he laid down some tracks.
He came to a different studio?
If you listen to that, all the rock guitar and soloing and stuff on there, Going the Mile on Blindside View, he played on. But then he did parts on this record, like, we could maybe use a part here and there as we were going through it. You know, most of my records have like two different guys playing, because I sort of like that. Getting back to your point earlier, I think everybody's trying to get that. Well, not everybody, but a lot of the rock and roll bands are trying to get that live vibe on their recording, where it sounds exciting and a little scary, not just like stacked layers that all become this pipe of sound. But even if you just get the bass and drums and it sounds mostly, and everybody can kind of copy that off, play off that excitement, you can sort of keep it through the process and not ruin it. But yeah, to answer your question, he's on some of the new record. There's parts here and there. But my stuff ends up being like a collage of two different guys usually playing leads. I don't like to play leads. I'm just okay. But, you know, I do the rhythms and singing and stuff.
Minahan's ended up on so many records.
Yeah, well, if he's getting into it, he'll pick up his guitar and sneak something on there. And
he's
there's
the
probably
best.
Other stuff I don't even know that's on there that he did before I got there.
The way he plays, it's such ease. I remember when I came in earlier, Mike was talking about Chase Lounge, and it reminded me of the Wet Leg song. And I don't know if you guys were at the Justine Cobalt tribute concert.
I wish.
Played at it, yeah.
Minahan played, and he covered Chase Lounge. Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. I'm like, what the?
I grew up, you know, listening to Dave Minahan, and I just, you know, talk about somebody who just lives it. I mean, he understands every aspect of it, and he's very generous with his time and his talent. So
yeah, I'll show you the power of Dave. He's getting free publicity this morning. Dave, well, hope you well, buddy.
I described him after. Because I had worked with him 23 years ago, I don't know. But then, you know, started again in 2023, and I describe him at the end of the process as he's the keeper of the vibe and creator of character. Mm. Like, he knows when something's getting off track, and he also knows when something's losing or needs something else to make it pop, you know, in a way that moves you. So that's really... two valuable lessons. I sort of knew those, but it was good to have those pounded back in my head this time for future stuff.
Mm. Well put. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
You know, I obviously know David very well now, but when I originally signed the Neighborhoods, if I could brag for a minute, because I love to brag about that, you know, because, I mean, one of the greatest bands ever. Mm-hmm. I didn't know them very well at first. You know, Mike Quaglia is who I used to talk to on the phone every single day, and whoever was managing, because they had a lot of different managers, and that was one of the problems, I think, with the Neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. There was always someone, got to do it this way, got to do that. But... he's a genius. He really is, in every way. He's also a great human being, too. So it's good that we get to talk to about Dave for a second. One more thing before I let you guys go, and I know that you've all been playing for at least 20 years, right? Probably longer.
Oh,
I looked at Mark when I said that.
Yeah.
Maybe 40.
20-ish, 20-plus.
What are the big differences? Like, what are the big differences now when you go to a club that you have noticed? What's different about the whole club experience? Is there a difference?
No smoking.
No smoking. Yeah.
Everyone is much friendlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Than in the old days. Like in the olden times of the 80s and 90s, you know, a lot of times you'd walk in and it was like going into enemy territory, dealing with the sound person and just everybody in the staff, and if there was a promoter there. And now everyone is just very polite and nice, and I enjoy it. It feels more like a team effort, you know.
Good. Yeah, excellent.
So it's a positive thing for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad I went through the wars, but it's nicer now, and the sound is much better now.
Absolutely. The technology is...
Did you notice a lot of these clubs have a guy just holding an iPad walking around?
And I love that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool because they can check the sound from different parts of the room, make sure, kind of strike a balance between wherever. If you're stationed somewhere, you only get that... Yeah. You can walk around and stuff, but it's much easier to have it with you and then dial it in exactly right from that corner.
Yeah, the first time I saw that, I was amazed.
It's pretty cool.
Amazed.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you guys for coming down. We only have an hour, unfortunately,
because
we're live on the radio.
Good to hang with you, Steve and Mike.
Yeah, do you guys want to plug anything?
Nice to meet Mark.
I know Mark's playing tonight in Portland. What's the club?
Geno's.
Geno's,
great.
Legendary club in Portland.
Our first time up there. I never played there with Slapshot or anything, so first time.
Great.
Do you have anything coming up, Tash?
We have a bunch of shows coming up there. We're playing April 18th at the Midway Cafe with, I think, going back to the Neighborhoods, regular Casanovas. Is Lee Harrington in that?
Lee, by the way, Lee, we love you too, Lee.
Yes,
sorry
indeed.
We forgot to mention
Devil
Lee Harrington.
Love and the Daylilies on that bill. We're gonna open up the night. It's a nice show starting, so we'll start at 8, and then it'll be cool because I haven't seen some of those people in a while, so
that's a good gig.
Yeah,
that's a good room to play. Nice cozy little room.
That's almost like the Midway. Not disrespectful, it's almost like a cockroach that survives through a microwave, and it just doesn't seem to go away. As much as Boston changes,
Yeah, the Midway's very old
expanding
school.
Expanding the room, it's unbelievable. It's still the same gritty little club, and the sound is, like we're talking, it's way better. It was really good last time we were there. I was stunned.
I'm happy to hear you guys are enjoying playing your shows these days. See, I'm old school, and I remember like Club Lingerie in Hollywood, CBGB, The Rat, you know. Some of the rooms I used to go to around the country was still around, and you know, it's good to have that you guys are having good experiences.
But like Chuck was saying, going through the wars, you know, it's like I think that makes us who we are today. So,
thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming down to WMFO. And until the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive. We're going to play the full version of I Love Rock and Roll by the Dogmatics for you. Enjoy.
Are tuned in to WMFO 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio, serves Boston and all the world, WMFO.org. It is just about 11.
Look at that.